After a hiatus, the IMG Roadmap podcast is back. We are bigger and better than ever before. I want to thank you for listening. I thank you for more than 102,000 downloads. We have listeners on every continent now. I'm so excited. If you love this podcast, do me a favor. Allow me to stay alive by leaving a comment and rating me on Apple, Spotify, or Google Podcasts, literally wherever you listen to the podcast. Oh, and if you would like to join the cohort of physicians who start residency in 2023 and you are an IMG, then this program is for you. I have my waitlist open currently for the 2022 IMG Roadmap Life Program, and you don't want to miss it. So click the link in the show notes. The IMG Roadmap is the only podcast dedicated to coaching international medical graduates and success blueprints for this unique pathway. I am Dr. Nina Loom, your host, a previous IMG turned hospital medicine physician, healthcare administrator, speaker, and coach. I empower, encourage, and equip you with actionable steps that you can take towards the residency position of your dreams. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the IMG Roadmap Podcast. I'm recording today with Dr. Aditi Agarwal, and I'm so excited to have her. She's a psych resident who's also an IMG and has a story to share with y'all. So welcome on the podcast, Dr. Agarwal. How are you doing?
Good. It's really nice to meet you, Dr. Loom. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. So, you know, I usually start off the episode by just asking you to tell us, you know, some about your background, like give us insight as to who you are, where you went to medical school, and really what defines you as an IMG.
So, as you know, my name is Aditi Agarwal, introduced. I'm originally from India, did my medical school in India from Institute of Medical Sciences, Banaras Hindu University. I graduated in the year 2020. I'm currently a psychiatry resident first year in St. Elizabeth Medical Center, Boston.
Awesome. So a first year psych resident in Boston, Massachusetts, and originally from India, where you went to medical school. That's great. So can you give us some insight as to what the USMLE journey was like for you? When did you start studying for the exam? What was that process like?
So an Indian med school is around 5.5-6 years. Where you have like 4.5 years of theory and 1 year of internship, which is like clinical work in different specialties. I decided to give the USMLEs during my first month of internship. So around 4.5 years had already passed. I decided for a multiple reasons, basically, because like Indian system has its pros and cons, like every country has its pros and cons. But I was like really passionate about psychiatry, and I felt like the training and the exposure I would get here would be much more paramount than I would be able to get back home. And I think I just would become a much more capable person in general if I was here. So I decided in my first year of internship, that would be January 2019. I gave my step one in August of 2019. I was still working as like doing my internship year. Then I started like preparing for step two CS. I started like applying for electives, all the university electives people tell you to apply to, like Cleveland Clinic and Mayo and Harvard and Yale and things like that. And and then around January 2020, the COVID started and everything became unpredictable and everything got canceled, right? So in February, like I was, so that when you apply to university programs, it take around 3 to 4 months to reply back to you, whether you got accepted or not. I was supposed to know by February, but the electives had already been canceled by January end, and the CS had already been canceled. So I knew like travel would not be a possibility anytime soon. So I did the most logical thing that I could think of, was to study for step two CK and get my theory steps done. At that time, I was also like I started doing like a research project in the psychiatry department at my own institute. To improve my CV and everything. For me, I think it was really important to not take too much of a gap year for multiple reasons that I will tell later. So I gave my step two CK in August of 2020. I already applied for a paid tele rotation through a paid agency in July. So as soon as I completed my August step to CKN or August 20, I started doing my telerotation. So I got to know that like CS has been canceled and we can apply without the CS. And for me, that was like an opportunity, a gambling opportunity, but an opportunity nevertheless, that I might be able to like match this year without taking too much of a gap. So I was like really excited about that. So I like started filling the ERAS form. So that 1 month I did my telerotation. I did the CV, personal statement, still like trying to do some research on the other hand that I might get published. Then around in September, in October, they told us that we have to give the OET, I think, that is required to get ECFMG certified. I'm actually decently good in English because in India, you tend to teach you English like very early on. But the OET marking system is like so strange that I actually failed the speaking exam because I think I spoke all lines in 3 minutes and I was supposed to speak for 5 minutes. So that was like a setback. And then the certification process, they took around $900 more for the ECFMG certification process during COVID. But the process was very, very, very tedious. And I got certified like 2 days before I submitted my rank list, even though my things had been completed in November. So that was a big, big source of stress throughout my interview cycle. So then I applied. I got 2-3 interviews immediately. So the red flags mostly in my application was no US clinical experience. I'd never been in the States. I did not have my step 3 and I was not ECFMG certified. So it wasn't like a major red flag in the sense that I had like very like a lower score or something like that could not be changed, but it was basically like an incomplete application. I think throughout the process, I was very nervous. I was like hypomanic, honestly, all the time thinking how I can improve my chances of matching the interview cycle. Every time you have to be focused that you are not leaving any stone unturned and you're doing everything. And so I sent a lot of personalized letter of interest, like would read up on the whole website, see their videos of the programs before I would like form the letter to show why I was interested in that program. I got 4 to 5 more interviews because of my letter of interest. And I also reached out on Twitter and I reached out on LinkedIn because I feel like emails can easily be like neglected because they get so many emails. But LinkedIn and Twitter are somehow able to reach out to these really people in like really good places, to program directors directly. So the program where I did match at, I reached them out through LinkedIn. I got an interview. None of my interviews were through connection. The connections I did try and did not work, except the ones that I got through, like the attending who I did telerotation with, he recommended me to one place and I did get an interview from there. So I interviewed a lot of places. They asked when I would be certified. I would tell them I would get certified next week because my process was done and that was what ECFMG was telling me, but I would not get certified. So I think that really affected my rank list for them ranking me. They were also like asking whether we will be able to adjust in the States. I remember interviewing at one place where they were really into diversity and the population they served was mostly like Latinos, Spanish, and African American. And me being an Indian and never being to the States, I had never been even exposed to that population. So it was very hard for me to show, like, I showed how I was passionate about diversity in my different population that I have been exposed to, but it was difficult to say how I was passionate. So there were a lot of like cultural differences and answers that I felt like I did not know how to respond to. And then I matched and now I'm here.
That's a very amazing story. So how many programs did you apply to?
So I applied to 150.
Okay. And how many did you get interviewed?
I got interviewed at 8 places and 1 waitlist, which I think is a very good number compared to my atypical application, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. So 150 places, 8 interviews. And then based on, you did all your application from India. You were not in the States.
Never.
Okay. So you have a unique story because you are showing us how as IMGs, we can match. We can apply, first of all, because that's the first step. We can apply into residency and literally interview and match without having ever been in the States?
I think that was like the, honestly, I know COVID really halted a progress for many of the applicants, but I had like financial constraints that I'll tell later on. So COVID had been a boon for me because it allowed me to interview virtually. It allowed me to work while I was interviewing. It allowed me to do rotations while I was like making my CV and PS. So it allowed me to combine a lot of steps into a jam-packed year.
Yeah. And I think one thing you said that really resonated with me was you said, I saw an opportunity, because a lot of people did not see COVID or the interruptions that COVID brought as an opportunity. But you were like, you know what? Well, now I don't have to travel because my rotations are canceled. Now, you know, things are, CS is canceled or whatnot. But what else can I do is how you processed it, as opposed to like, oh, woe is me, I'll never match because I did not do a US rotation, right? Can you talk to us about how and why you decided to think of that as an opportunity?
I guess that's an interesting question. So I honestly feel like, even though I feel like a lot of people who apply to US, they make their CV how US people like it, like do research, do extracurricular activities, do social work, because they think that it will look good. And I feel like I'm generally very passionate about my subject. And like, I had like made videos on depression, I had done quizzes, I had done like research, even though I had not had no intention of going abroad before. So I think that was like, so I was kind of used to making the best of whatever I've had.
Yeah.
And so in India, I had a seat, residency seat back home. And when I decided to give USMLE and go all out, I knew I was like foregoing that seat. And that was a lot of pressure from my parents, who see like a gap year as a failure, especially from a person who has had like a very clean educational record.
Yeah.
So for them, it was like taking a big risk without any certain outcomes, how long it would take, how much finance it would take. And it was just like, from the start, I knew I would have to have that conviction. I knew I had to be good enough and just like keep like whatever will come my way, I will manage. So I think that attitude was throughout, like, and plus I feel like even though 15 years ago, maybe the matching rates were better, but now we have technology which allows us to connect to professors and attendings and collaborate very, very easily. Like, I feel like in the 6 months I was collaborating when I was interviewing while working a job in a COVID unit, I was collaborating with a psychiatrist in Brown University on her research project. I got contacted by two other professors who wanted me to help out in some things, and I did not have the time. I had to say no. And so many people keep sending like cold calls to do research and they never hear back. And I got contacted because I was active on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. So in every step of your journey, another thing that you said, which stood out to me, and we'll get back to all the questions that we want to talk about. But one thing that stood out to me was when you said, you always take advantage of the things that come your way. And you always seem to be the kind of person who doesn't wait for this a special sort of circumstances, right? Like, you do, in spite of. And that's the mindset that I want the listener to take home with them. Because what you were doing is, you were going to be a psychiatrist in India at any cost. You were going to do everything possible to be the best psych doctor that you could be in India. And so when it came to migrating to the States, you took that same vigor and you said, hey, I'm going to do it. And I'm also going to try to do it abroad, right? I think a lot of people forget that in order to be good at something, you cannot like underestimate the need for passion and the need for purpose. Because irrespective of where you ended up, you've been doing work around, you know, publishing papers on depression. You've been working your way towards this career from the get-go. And I think that's what makes you stand out, is this wasn't just something that you thought about overnight and decided to pursue. It's something that you've been actively pursuing. And so when it came time to change trajectory and look at the United States, you already had a lot in your arsenal. You've been doing research. You've been involving yourself in psych as far as, you know, in your home country. You already had a backup plan, which was to stay and do residency. You had a plan A and a plan B and a plan C. A lot of IMGs who don't succeed, in my opinion, beyond scores and all of that, is because they're changing their plan. They were one thing in one country, and they think that they can just switch in order to fit the mold to be somebody that they're not in another country. And then they wonder why they're not successful. There's a lack of integrity there. There's a lack of consistency. Their CV doesn't really speak to the passion of the specialty. Whereas you could start working on being the best pediatrician wherever you're located right now and apply that same vigor and that same work to the U.S. system without even having ever been in the U.S. and still match. And I think that's something that you're sharing with us, that I think is very important that IMGs hear when they listen to this podcast, is that you have to be consistent to who you are. You have to be consistent to your passions, your purpose. You don't switch things up because you think it's going to look great for another person or a program or what people are telling you on the internet to do. If you're going to be a researcher, be a researcher. If you're going to be somebody that collaborates with others, be that person. If you're going to network, network the heck out of network. Like, don't take whatever people are feeding to you on the internet as the go-to word. Have a purpose of your own. Like, use your own brain. Like, you know, I mean, I hate to sound like that, but it's the truth, right? That's what makes your story so different, is you had ideas that you were already going to pursue in another country, and you just sort of pivoted and say, hey, let me look at this opportunity in the US. So thanks so much for sharing that beat of your story. I really think that just hit the nail on the head. I had to expand on it because that was great. So usually on the podcast, what people don't know is me and you have been trying to record this since, how long has it been that we've been trying to get
7 months or something?
Yes, for 7 months. Actually, I don't remember how we met. Can you remind me how this even started?
I just started following you on Instagram, and I used to listen to your podcast, and I used to, if I was nervous or I had like some doubts, I would message you and you would reply. So when I did match, I felt like as a person who did not have a lot of guidance, and I had like looked to YouTube videos and podcasts for information and guidance, I also wanted to like share my story so other people could also benefit from the same. And obviously, it would have been, I really wanted to work with you also.
Yeah, awesome. I'm so excited that we finally got to record, because I was like, it's been months. So when I thought, you know, we're coming back with season 3 of the podcast, the 2022 edition, I was like, I need to come back and find that email from Aditi so I can get her on the podcast, because we've been wanting to record this for a while. I remember, you know, texting back and forth with you in the past through Instagram. But sometimes I get so many messages that it's hard to tie it together with who's who. But I'm so happy that we can meet in person but I'm still happy that we can meet and like chat, and it makes everything come around 360. You know what I mean? Actually, while we're talking, I'm going to give you the next question, and I'm going to go to my Instagram and try to find our thread so I can figure out some things that I want other IMGs to learn from when they list their story. So your next question, while I do that homework, is we've talked about your USMLE pathway. Can you tell us some of the challenges that you overcame throughout this time?
Do you want me to start speaking?
Yeah, go ahead. Go for it.
So I think the major challenge was my financial constraints. Mm-hmm. Even though it's not like I came from a very poor background, I would say I had a good childhood. My parents were just like very uncertain of this whole end of year, and this was very out of their comfort zone, and they were just like, it was like a shock to them, and to explain to them how much it would cost and what the process was, it was just like something that they could not wrap their head around. And so I like initially, like I knew like I had to figure it out mostly on my own. So I funded 80% of my journey on my own. So otherwise, like doing it from India was again a boon, because I think I did not really spend that much compared to people who had to like fund themselves for 1 or 2 years in the States. The other thing was just, I think like society and family in general, like they were always like, okay, you're taking a gap year. What are you doing? So you're sitting at home studying for an exam. There are always like questions. And I have an actual sister who started residency like as soon as she graduated. We were like twins. So there was always like constant comparison. Okay, she's like doing residency. What are you doing? How long will it take? And everybody's like, oh, when are you going to the States? Nobody like really understood the process. Even like my med school batchmates and juniors, they just saw it like a big ambitious dream, while I didn't really see it like an ambitious dream, I just saw it like a path. So I couldn't like really tell what I was, the struggles I were facing. To them, it just seemed like a rosy ordeal that they did not understand. And then there were not a lot of seniors. Like in India, there are multiple medical colleges who have very fixed paths to USMLE. They have like 10, 15 students every year go to the States and they match properly. So they have tie up for electives. They have a lot of attendings, residents that they can contact. And they tell you like from second year, if you want to do USMLE, participate in that, go into that committee, do that research. And we didn't have like, I say we because there were like four of us that applied to the match together. We didn't have any of that guidance. So a lot of like, I feel like regretful sometimes because like I said, like I was doing research, but in internship year, when I started searching for opportunities, I felt like, oh my God, there's so many things I could have done in med school. So I think like just a lack of guidance on the general process, like for like electives, I think paid agencies, everybody like scared me off that paid agencies don't count and they're a fraud and they're a scam and you should apply only to university electives. But honestly, my experience was like really good. And the time process it took to apply to electives and the time process it took for them to reply back and the time I wasted, if I'd saved that just to get a paid elective, and now we have so many attendings who give like cheaper electives, I think it's like a good alternative, honestly. So it was just like lack of guidance, lack of finances. And that was, finances was a big thing on my mind because the whole time I was studying, the whole time I was applying for electives, it kept going back and forth in my mind. It's like, how am I going to pay for it? How will the next step be?
Yeah, I mean, I'm amazed at how you navigated those issues and overcame them. And I hope that anyone listening can take some inspiration from that, because challenges will always be there. Like there's always going to be problems, right? That's one thing I've come to realize. Life is full of problems. They never seem to stop. It's just a matter of how are you willing to deal with the problem? How are you willing to rise up above the problem? I think living a life where you feel like everything is just going to work out the way you want it to be is the most deceptive thing ever, right? Mm-hmm. But being honest with yourself to say, hey, you know, life is going to consistently give me curveballs, but how do I rise up above that? I think that's the key. So, you know, driving into some other questions that we had for you, we want to know also what you recommend now looking back, because right now you are a PGY1, which is postgraduate year one, an intern in psych at a Boston area facility. How do you recommend that other IMGs go about securing interviews? Like, what are your tips for that?
I think it all depends on how much time you have. If you're like a second year, third year, collaborating from the start, there are a lot of communities. Like for medicine, there's a community called Clinical Problem Solvers. It's a very nice community where attendings come and talk regularly and you get face-to-face time with them. For psychiatry, there's a student network called PsychSign, mm-hmm. which is open to international students also. And they have like poster presentations, meetings, they have advisors and like, and online communities like Twitter and LinkedIn. So I think social media is like a very great levelizer. To be honest, like you don't need to be in the North Carolina, you don't need to be in Duke, you don't need to be at Harvard to interact with these people that are professors over there. And showcasing like your portfolio, like what work you're doing. I think documentation is something that we don't tend to do. At least people don't tend to do in India. And I think that is, documentation is what shows what you have done, right? Even if you have done hundreds of work and nobody knows of it, how will they know?
Right.
So I think like just like in LinkedIn, you can any talk that you do, any activity that you do, just like documenting it on social media gives somebody who has been following you for a year or two and then following all these people in your specialty, gives them a sense of what you are doing. And they will see you doing those things of interest for over 2 years. So unconsciously, that will generate a level of trust of who you are. And so actually, when they see your application, that might not be the first time they actually be knowing about you or reading about you. So, and collaboration. So it does not always have to be research. I feel like we tend to do research because that seems like a straightforward decision. If you're not matching, do research. But now like podcasts, there are like psychiatry podcasts, there are medicine podcasts, there are like illustrations. You can collaborate in a number of ways. So collaborating on different projects, research or non-research, social work projects to make connections. And I think it's not about just like making fake connections, but like, I think for me, integrity is really important. So having that genuine bond with the person you're working with and showing up and doing good work. So you develop these connections over 2-3 years. So when you're actually applying, even if you didn't have like connections through the normal route, you made those connections yourself.
Right.
And they help. And they're like, if you are willing to work, people are really open to helping you.
Right. Absolutely. I agree 100%. 100%. So the next thing we want to know is, did you require a visa during this part of your process? Did you require an H-1B, a J-1?
I haven't given my step 3 yet. So I came on a J-1 visa.
Okay. I did a J-1 too. So I have no problems with the J-1 visa. And I think for me at the time, it was a great opportunity and I'll do it again. So the reason I ask that is some listeners think that maybe they can't match into site because they have a visa problem, or, you know, they can't match into site because they haven't done clinicals in the US and they have a visa. Can you speak to that visa applicant who is seeing more problems than solutions?
Even though I did match without like in-person clinical experience, I do recommend a person to do that because the interviews I did get were mostly university programs, which I think like my application resonated with them, but I did not get any typical IMG friendly community program interviews, honestly. Yes. So I think I got like filtered out because of my lack of US experience in step 3 for them. So it's like, if you don't have it, you do what you can, mm-hmm. but it's good to have it. J1, I think psychiatry is one specialty where visa is not too much of a barrier, as long as you're passionate about the subject. And like this time I was on the other end of the interview cycle. I was listening to my third years. I was listening to the attendings and what they were looking for in applicants. Right. And yeah. I like was in the question answer sessions for some of my applicants. So visa was not a big, honestly, cat criteria, especially in my program. It was much more of like whether they were pleasant and whether they were really passionate about the subject.
Right. Absolutely. I agree with you. H-1B obviously requires that you do step 3. And that's why Dr. Agarwal is talking about that. H-1B would eliminate the need to do a 2-year underserved requirement, which is also a strong advantage, especially if you have no desire to live in a smaller town or work in a community hospital. But there are ways around that. But this is not a visa podcast. So I'll talk about the visa stuff on a separate podcast. So stay listening. Talking about the podcast, did you listen to the podcast during your USMLE journey and application season?
I did listen to 4 episodes. I cannot say that I listened to everyone because, like I said, it was a jam-packed year.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I just wanted to find out. So I found our thread on Instagram. And I think your first message to me was probably in 2019 in December. Mm-hmm. And then I think I see where you had written to me in June 13, 2020, asking if, you know, what I thought about tailor rotations. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad that you went ahead and took that tailor rotation and rode with it. And then I have another update from you in 2020 in September, with a CK update, and you wanted to update me on your score of 242 on step 2 CK. And you wanted to know if there was any point in applying into programs where there are no IMGs currently enrolled into. So what do you think about that question? Let me ask you that question now, because now this has been 2 years later, almost. Is it 2 years? Maybe a year and a half later. And I'm asking you the same question you asked me on September 7, 2022, which is, I gave step 2 CK. I have a 243. Wanted to update you, Dr. Loom. I have a question. Is there any point to apply to colleges that have no IMGs currently but accept application? Thank you for your time. That was your question on September 7th. And I know what I wrote back in response, but what would you say to that question?
So that's interesting. I have found out that there is no barriers. Like there's no dead no for anything. Like you can get into any program, but like maybe for Harvard, you might need a Nobel Prize. I don't know. So it's all about how irreplaceable and how lucrative you can sell yourself and make yourself. Like I think some people who want to match into plastic surgery, they know beforehand that they will need like ultimate scores and work 2-3 years directly in research. So then you apply beforehand. So should you apply to these programs? Yes, if you have put your application, made your application in a way that these programs would consider you. But if you're going the traditional route of giving your steps, giving your clinical, doing your clinical experience and doing some research, honestly, not really. Like, I felt like even in the 150 programs, 50 programs were just like throwaways that I thought, like, why not? Mm-hmm. And it was kind of pointless.
Right. So how would you have selected out of those 150? What would have been some criteria that you have looked at looking back?
Just like seeing if they have international graduates in the program beforehand, even one, because psychiatry is not a field where you get like 20% or 15% like internal medicine. 5% IMG rate is also a possibility. Also, I actually created a list on, I have a blog. So I asked all the residents who actually interviewed at different psychiatry programs and where they got interviewed from. So it's like just 50 or 60 programs for psych, but in medicine, there are like 200 programs that medicine people actually interviewed at. So knowing where people have got interviews before is one of the possibly best places to apply, because especially like internal medicine, where you have like 600 programs or 500 programs, and you will apply to maximum of 200. So you need this 200 to be each program to be an actual chance.
Right. Absolutely.
So I think like list like those, like I have a list. I've seen other people also post some lists, like other IMGs. So going through those lists and looking at newer programs, I think newer programs are generally more open. So if you go to the ECGME website and look like which programs got accredited in this year, you get a list and you can see the sponsor visas. So those programs might be a good option.
Thanks for sharing that. So another question we have for you. I know you have a blog, which is girlinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinthebootsinth diti.life. How can IMGs connect with you? If they want to connect with you, is there a preferred way that you would want them to reach out?
So my blog has a lot of articles on like what helped that improve my study score, and some articles from other people, like how they secured a research position, which I felt was like really important compared to like, because B1, B2 was closed and research position was one way to come to the States. So blog does not have a way to connect with me, but you can like, there's always like articles to help IMGs, and they are from IMGs themselves. My Instagram, you can just message me. It's a public profile, aditi.life. I also have like USMLE flashcards, which I used to post like flashcards when I was studying. I still do some, like when I'm still preparing for step three, I post, which has around 9,000, 8,000 subscribers right now. That is, I've been using to answer questions more. So if you're like specific for USMLE, go on that. If something personal, maybe my personal profile, just send me a message. I reply.
Yeah. So I love at USMLE flashcards because it's the best flashcards daily. And you have like what we call high yield concepts on there and case presentations and a little bit of like workup. So it's a good way for people who spend a lot of time on social media. They can use that to review, because you could just go on there and review 5 posts of at USMLE flashcards and probably be able to get some good education in the process. So I think that's a pretty cool idea. So yeah, I'll put all of Dr. Agarwal's information in the show notes so you can click on it and you can connect with her and learn more about whatever you want to learn from her. Actually, she's open and honest and willing to share with you from her journey. So before we let you go today, we just want to say thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for sharing so much with us about yourself and about your journey. I know that this information will help another IMG who is listening. And I never like to let anybody go without asking them specifically to tell us their mantra for success. Like, what makes you tick? What is your secret sauce, right, for making it this far and checking off those boxes of your goals that you had for yourself as an IMG?
First of all, I would like to say I loved being here, and I'm like really happy that we got to do this finally.
Yes.
And it's just like, I hope that we meet again. Can I ask like your mantra before I answer?
I think my mantra is my belief in Jesus. I am 100% a firm believer in Bible, and I literally know that everything in my life comes as a result of the grace of God. And so my mantra has been that God has continued to bless me and he would not stop now. That's one thing I hold myself by. Now, on a more mundane and personal level, it's around just doing the things that I want to do. So I don't sit around and ruminate on, oh, should I just, and then I figure out what's going to happen. Like so many times I start doing something and then I stop and think about it. I don't think about it and then I start, because I've noticed that it's in moving that you get momentum. It's in starting that you get, you build inertia and you utilize the inertia that you've been, that's been sitting inside of you. So instead of waiting, I just do. That's my.
I completely agree with the second point. I'm like, this is something I've been trying to incorporate in my own life, to not think so much before I start, just start and then figure it out later. I honestly don't think I have like a one set line. I do believe like I'm a decently spiritual person, and I felt like a lot of things came together, not just because of my efforts, but because the universe was like supporting me, because some things were like out of my control, honestly. But I have this general sense of like values that I kind of endorse, like being kind, but being smart. And I have a very strong curiosity about understanding how our behavior and the humans function, and just understanding life in general. I think this understanding life has been my main tick that makes me keep like working.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I chose cycles.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Understanding life. And I think understanding why we do what we do is a key trait in general, because I also notice that the more I understand about life, the more I can coach IMGs, because you start to realize that life is all about relationships, and relationships are not only personal, they could be professional. And in many ways, like in your story, you talk about moments where relationships have helped you, whether it's on Twitter and meeting people on there, or whether it's on a telerotation and paying for an experience to meet people, or whether it is meeting me on Instagram and chatting with me on there. And then I point you to the podcast and you listen to one or two episodes or three or four episodes. And then you learn one or two things which help in one way or the other. Or whether it's the people that you worked with in India to produce your papers. Those are all relationships. And for some odd reason, as an IMG, sometimes we forget that just as vital as other relationships have been to us to bring us to where we're at, the relationships that we make along the way are also equally important, because in many ways, I don't see myself in you. I don't see a relationship ending here. I see us continuing to build a relationship over time. And as you continue to grow in your career, and as I continue to grow in my coaching and in the things that I do for IMGs and as bloggers, I just see that there is definitely potential for us to continue to grow in relationship. If I'm ever in the Boston area, I know we'll meet up for coffee, right? So there are just certain things that are guaranteed to happen because of relationship. And I think sometimes it's easy for us to forget that. Like every touch point in your life could be used for your benefit. And it's the same point on paid rotations. You know, people send me messages all the time, should I do a paid telerotation? And I'm like, it's not about the fact that it's paid. It's about the fact that what are you going to do with it? That is the key. What are you going to do with it? What relationships are you going to build during that time? How are you going to utilize them? That is the question. It's not whether it's a paid. There's so many things in life that are paid, right? That we gain tremendous benefit from, more than what we paid for. I would even beg to argue, medical education is not free. We pay for medical school. And for some, we pay too much. For some, we pay too little. But in the grand scheme of things, the amount of money that you invest for medical school does not equate to what you get out of medical school if you're the kind of person who knows how to use things and understand life, right? Because we all go to medical school, but not every physician becomes successful. That's the truth. So at the end of the day, it's about that understanding of life and seeing that there are patterns in life. Things repeat themselves. There's nothing new under the sun. Like this is just a cycle. And understanding life, I think, is a key thing, because you can extrapolate from one area of your life to another area and so on and so forth. So I love your mantra. just as much. It helped me reflect with you and with everybody listening, because now you guys know how my brain works. When someone says something, this is how I think. I dissect it and I'm like, it makes so. Thanks for coming on, Dr. Agarwal. Is there anything else that you wanted to share with us that we haven't given you the opportunity to say? Like, this is your platform. I want you to roll with it. Anything else you want to leave us with that we have not mentioned?
Can I just shout out to the random psych sign advisor, Dr. Ali?
Yes.
From, I think, Baylor, who did not know me and who was a USMD. But he actually reviewed my PS once and gave an interview, like did a mock interview once, and it really helped. And I'm very, very sure I made a lot of mistakes and I made a lot of funny answers that he had to like probably keep his mouth zipped and not say anything like hard to control. So I think like how you said, maintaining relationships, I think like I am grateful to a lot of people on the ways, many of them who did not know me, and just like maintaining those relationships and giving back when you can.
And in many ways, you coming on today to share your story 7 months after we first talked about it is you giving back. So we appreciate you coming on to share, because I'm sure for some reason there had to be a reason that made you feel like, I really want to do this. I'm going to do this. And that's, I think, the essence of giving back, because your story now will live on the podcast and someone else will listen to it and gain inspiration just as much as maybe you listen to someone else's story over the last year and a half and gain inspiration from it. So thank you.
Thank you.